Okay, well, BSE is an issue for people because it's a what we call a zoonotic disease. That means that people can contract a version of BSE through eating inappropriate feed, and that was contaminated feed that had bits of nervous or brain tissue in it, typically hamburger at the time. So that's what made BSE such an issue. It's really the fact that it can pass from a cow to a human. It doesn't do that very well. Relatively few people contracted what was called variant CJD in Europe, compared to the number of people that were exposed, which was in the millions, and we have cases in the hundreds. However, it's not a very nice disease. It's untreatable. It's a long incubation period, so you don't know when you have it. And we found since that people with variant CJD can pass that disease on through things like blood transfusions or surgical procedures, transplantations, etc. So it needs to be addressed. However, BSE is a disease, or classical BSE, I'll define it as that. That can be controlled through the feed source. So cattle get BSE by eating contaminated feed. And two things have happened in the interim between 2003 in Canada when the first case was discovered and now. And one is that the feed source is much better controlled. So we're really putting in a lot of measures to make sure cattle aren't exposed to eating BSE contaminated material. Also, the human feed source is better controlled, so we make a great effort in removing those risk materials that may in fact impact human health, so the brain and the spinal cord and other areas of the animal that we know harbour high levels of the infectious protein. They're all removed now at the source and disposed of in a way that they don't go into either human or animal feed.
You're involved in researching bovine genomics, and a lot of effort in the research community in trying to deal with these prion diseases and BSE has been focused on the prions and the genetics involved in that. Why is that?
Well, the bottom line is, when all this started, we knew nothing about this. I mean, prion disease was an esoteric area of research for years and years and years. These funny diseases where they weren't caused by a virus or a bacteria, as far as anybody could tell. And then Stanley Prusiner won the Nobel Prize for saying, no, it's a protein that can actually, when it enters the nervous system, can actually turn your own proteins into a form that gives you a disease. So this is this protein misfolding thing. So you have a normal protein. We call it PRP in scientific circles, and that can be converted into what we call a prion by being exposed to an abnormally folded protein, PRP protein itself. So it's a chain reaction sort of thing. It takes years and years to happen, but eventually you succumb to the fact that your brain is affected by these abnormally folded proteins. So we knew nothing about that. It was very small. Then came BSE and variant CJD, the human form, and people started realising they had to pay attention. Now, when you consider the time between Pasteur and some of the things we know now about microbes and disease, it's hundreds of years. We've not been at this very long. And it seems that, as these new things hit, the expectation is we will be able to address them almost immediately. You look at AIDS, for example, as another one where we knew very little about these sorts of viruses when it occurred. It's taken a long, long time to get up to speed, to understand enough. And recently there was an announcement of a partially effective vaccine for AIDS, for example. Now, we don't know whether we'll ever have a vaccine for BSE. There's work going on towards it, but it's early days still. The basic biology is still not well understood.
What are you looking at in the genes?
Well, in terms of the work we're doing on BSE and chronic wasting disease, which I think is a much more important issue in North America, the work we're doing is looking at the fact that some animals came down with disease, with BSE, and all of their pen mates were healthy. So if you look in the UK at all the cases, you'll see a number of animals in a herd coming down, and the rest of the animals were, by all intents and purposes, healthy animals. They didn't have disease. Why is that? They're all exposed to the same thing. Presumably they all were given the same feed because they're all in the same paddock. So we're trying to look at the genetics behind that to see if there's anything genetically different between the animals that came down with disease, the affected animals, and the non-affected animals. The reason we're doing that, again, is to try and get some insights into the pathways that lead to disease. So what genes are being turned on and off in these animals that may be different in the healthy or the diseased animals? What genetic variation, you know, mutations that the animal may have that don't cause anything that we can see but may affect their susceptibility to disease? So what does that look like? When we identify those, we can get a handle on maybe what genes are involved in susceptibility, and then make some progress towards understanding the disease progression.
What research have you done in that regard?
In terms of BSE, we've taken those two lines. We've looked at the gene expression, okay, what genes are being turned on and off. Unfortunately, the sample size we have to do that, despite those hundreds of thousands of cases in Europe, the sample sizes are very small, so it's a difficult thing to do. We have identified some genes that we think are involved, and interestingly enough, they're the same genes that are involved in things like Alzheimer's disease, which is a very similar disease but not infectious. And looking at the mutations, at the genetic variation in the animals, interestingly enough, some of the same genes are indicated there that give the animals a greater susceptibility to disease, as measured by, whether or not they have disease. So interestingly enough, some of the genes we've identified looking at the genetic variation in animals are the same genes we identify looking at the gene expression. So these are strong candidates in terms of the pathway to disease. When we understand what genes are involved in those pathways, we can get a handle on how the disease may be progressing. So it's a very fundamental issue. It's not going to overnight come up with a predictive test. It's really there so we can better understand how the disease is affecting the animals and understand the pathway towards infection and then death.
What progress have you made then? What have you found out?
Well, I won't rattle off the names of the genes. It's a bit esoteric for a lay audience, but I think we've identified some similarities between BSE and other protein folding diseases like Alzheimer's disease. The big difference, of course, between those two diseases is that BSE is infectious and something like Alzheimer's, as far as we know, is not infectious. But it looks like the same pathways are involved in disease progression in those types of diseases.
And is it the prion itself, or are there other factors that are influencing it?
Well, certainly there are. It's well accepted now that there have to be cofactors. There have to be other things that are interacting in that protein misfolding mechanism and how those proteins accumulate in the brain, for example. So there are a lot of things in all of our bodies that really are there to control that sort of thing. I mean, we turn over proteins all the time. The protein folding goes wrong all the time as proteins age, and there is a system in the body that accommodates that, that removes those things. It doesn't do that in prion disease, or it doesn't do it very well. And why is that? It doesn't do it in Alzheimer's disease. Why do we accumulate these misfolded proteins when really we have a mechanism there that should take care of it? So these are the sort of things we need to understand and may in fact lead to, once we understand, then we can start thinking about what to do about treatment or prevention.
Now you see it's infectious, and cows can get it from contaminated feed, but can the cows actually pass it from cow to cow?
That's a really interesting question. And the reason is we have no evidence that cows can pass it from cow to cow. And again, we're talking about the classical form of BSE. There's another form called atypical BSE, which appears to arise spontaneously at a very, very low frequency in animal populations. But to get back to your point, cattle can't pass it on horizontally, as we say, so animal to animal. Unless you grind up the animal and feed it to another animal, they can't pass it on. Whereas the prion disease that affects deer and elk, chronic wasting disease, they can pass it on. And scrapie in sheep can be passed from animal to animal. So BSE is different in that regard. We have in humans both transmissible forms of prion disease, such as kuru, which was caused by eating contaminated human flesh or brains in the case of the tribe in New Guinea. But we also have spontaneous forms. We have genetic forms of the disease. So it seems to be a little different in every species.
Do we have any tests yet that would indicate that cattle actually have it, or do you still have to wait until they're butchered?
There is no test available in cattle. There is a live animal test in deer that can pick it up at a late stage, and it involves taking some mucosal tissue from around the anus of the animal. Is not easy to do. You have to first catch your deer and then do something nasty to it. As far as cattle are concerned, there is nothing at the moment that you could apply in a farming system or a livestock system to test for BSE. The test is a post-mortem test. Now, that is a useful test all the same, and you have to ask, okay, if you did have a live animal test, what would you do with it? And that's really, do you test the animal at the time of slaughter? Do you test it earlier? And the status of the animal may change in between those two points. So there is a lot of work going on, and there's been a lot of work going on for a long time to try and develop a live animal test for BSE. And to date, there is nothing that could be applied in an industry context on live animals. And then there is the other issue of, if you had it, how would you do it? And I don't think there's been a lot of thought applied to that. What is felt is that if there was a live animal test, it may help open up some of the trade with countries that have their borders closed at the moment, because there would be no argument about the status of the animals. Although you could say that about a widely applied post-mortem test. So if every animal was tested that was going to one of these markets, then there wouldn't be a strong argument for keeping the borders shut.
So are we really any further ahead today than we were 6 years ago?
Yes, we are. We're not where people want to be, I'm sure. What people want is cattle herd free of disease, and that doesn't only go for BSE. We've just had an E. coli issue in the US, we have the H1N1 virus that has an animal host in birds and animals. So we would like to have all of these diseases under control, but the sad fact of the matter is that diseases tend to accommodate control issues pretty well. They mutate and they become adapted to whatever we try to do to control them. BSE is a little different. It's not so adaptable as far as we can tell. We don't have a live animal test. We don't have a cure. We don't have a vaccination. However, we have results that say, yes, it may be possible to vaccinate. We have some animal trials going on in Saskatchewan at the moment, for example, at Vito. We understand a lot more about animal to animal or species to species transmission of these diseases, which in some species will help us control the disease better. And this is specific to BSE. And we have some work going on in the human context in medicine to try and understand how these diseases progress and to develop intervention strategies. None of which have borne fruit at the moment, but we know a lot more than we did in 2003. So we're towards it, yes.
Why is it, though, that this has really only become an issue over the last 20 years? We didn't have this sort of thing before.
Yes, that's an interesting question. I think what happened in the UK, there's some theories about what happened. One of them was that they changed the way they rendered animal protein to put back in the animal feed chain, and that wasn't deactivating the misfolded protein. The people might argue that farming is more intensive now than it was 20 years ago. I don't buy that. I think it's not changed much. In fact, it's going a little bit the other way, if anything, driven by consumer demand. I think we're better at detecting these things, frankly. We pick things up earlier. The food agencies try to control it. The disease agencies try to control it early, so we hear all about it in the press. BSE may have been with us for hundreds of years. We don't know. The fact of the matter is we never had a big outbreak like in the UK, and that's spurned the subsequent outbreaks in other countries due to the importation of meat and bone meal or animals coming in for breeding, etc. The world's a smaller place. I think that contributes to the spread of disease. We all know every time we get on an aircraft that we're worried about contracting something through the air system, and frequently do, in my experience. So it's a small place. People travel worldwide very frequently. Animals travel worldwide very frequently. So the potential is there for things to spread a lot more easily than maybe 20 years ago.
But we also have chronic wasting disease, which we didn't know about before.
Yes, and that's an open question. I mean, chronic wasting disease has a focus around the wildlife site in Colorado, which was where it was first detected, and it seemed to be multiplied up in that population because these animals were in confinement and close to one another. It was one of those diseases that could spread horizontally between animals, so you had a big centre of infection, and it seems to have spread out from there. We don't know whether chronic wasting disease existed before in wild populations of elk and deer and moose. We know they do. It does now. The reason for that, is it a new disease? Personally, I find that unlikely. I think it's not a new disease. Are the populations of animals changing? Certainly. The density of wild population of deer in particular have skyrocketed over the years in those areas where chronic wasting disease is endemic. So probably a combination of factors, some of them human, some of them not, and we have to deal with it. We're starting to understand some of the mechanisms of how that disease is transmitted, how interaction with soils, etc., can make the agent even more infectious than normal, and Professor Judd Aitken at this university is doing a lot of work in that regard. But I don't know, will we ever know why chronic wasting disease suddenly took off? I don't know. I think we've got to go back to the 60s to find that, so I don't think we'll ever understand why that focus of infection spread so easily outwards. What we can do is look at it ongoing and try and make some predictions about where it might go next and put in some controls. We don't have very good controls in wild animals, any good way to stop a disease spreading. And we know that in human populations too. H1N1 is an example. I think that's spreading despite all the precautions everybody put in. We're hoping the vaccination will help. We'll see.
What is the focus of your research now?
The genes we've found that seem to affect susceptibility, an animal's susceptibility to disease. We need to do some more work to confirm that those genes are actually doing what we think they do. The only way to do that is to move into independent populations of animals. So we're hoping that we can get access to some other animals in Europe other than the British animals that we've worked on so far, in order to confirm those results. Once we know that, we can put the system together of what we know in the terms of the pathways, and then look at what other pathways may be involved or suggested by that, and investigate those. So it becomes, from what we've done in the past, which is kind of a shotgun approach where we've looked at everything, to a much more targeted approach where we look at specific pathways and specific genes in those pathways to see if we can find differences. In the future, we may be able to breed animals that are less susceptible. Whether or not they'll be completely resistant to disease, we don't know. But really, what happened in the UK was, in many ways, for the research of prion disease, an opportunity, because we will never have that level of infection again in a prion disease, apart from in the wild populations of animals in North America. And the wild populations in North America are very difficult to use as a controlled study, because you don't know much about any particular animal when it does come down. So we'll be looking at refining our results in order to get a better handle on what's actually happening in the progression of that disease.
When you get together with your other colleagues who are working on prion research, what holds promise for the future?
Oh, that's a good question. It's interesting, the meetings you have with prion researchers, it is so broad. We have everything from social scientists and economists right through to people who are doing very fundamental research in protein folding disease and the way proteins misfold and the dynamics of that, very, very physical chemistry studies on these things, which are very, very removed from, you know, what the issues may seem to be, although they're not, because we're understanding more and more about the fundamentals of the disease. So from what I've seen recently, the promise is that we'll understand more about how these proteins misfold and what triggers it. We're going to understand more about how society reacts to these sorts of diseases, and BSE, as I said, is only one of them. So understanding how society reacts means that we can put measures in place which is going to be effective in controlling the disease, and also that put them into effect in a way that the general public understands what's going on and can have some confidence in the system. We hope we can affect policy. That's a political point, not a scientific one. So we can inform, and I think there's a lot of that information now flowing to government through the various research groups in Canada and worldwide. In terms of an antemortem test, a live animal test, I think that's still a way off. I think we should really be looking at the best way to control the product to reassure the consumer that it's clean. And we have very good systems in place now, and I think most people, certainly in Canada, are reassured by them. The trick is to get an international agreement on some of those things, which again is a bit of a political point rather than a scientific one.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.